Saturday afternoon to you. Hope you're doing well. Welcome into another hour of Woods and Water South Carolina on 94.5 WGTK, The Answer in Greenville, South Carolina. I got by last weekend and didn't even realize that, hey, this show is 4 years old now. That is hard to believe. I can remember when I first started this, I was maybe, 4 or 5 months into it. Somebody says, hey, how long are you going to do it? And I was like, I don't know, 2, 3 years. I don't know how I'm going to run out of information at some point. I'm going to run out of topics to talk about at some point. It'll be over. And I think I still have a stack of stories from like 2014, 2015, stuff I've printed out that's good information that I have never had a chance to get to and probably never will at this point. But yeah, I appreciate it, especially the sponsors that have stayed with me who support this show every year. And that's over half my sponsors are from the first year still with me. That's pretty good, I'd say. I got to thank the station. I mean, I can remember when this was just an idea, how much they worked with me and getting it all kind of calming my nerves of how to do this and how to do research, how to fill up an hour. And I've had a ball doing it, and I appreciate everyone that's helped. I appreciate everyone out there that's listened. Give yourselves a pat on the back. Sometimes I wonder if you're out there, but all I got to do is give something away, and the lines all light up, and I know, hey, somebody is out there. They're still paying attention. So I appreciate everything that's made this what it is for the past 4 years. And, at this point, man, I don't know, another 5, 10, 15 years. However long my voice holds out, I guess. But, just a great couple of weeks getting ready for the Classic. I hope some of you got out there and maybe experienced it for the first time. If you didn't, it'll be back with the record attendance that Bass recorded, the impacts in both Anderson and Greenville counties, with all the tourists in, with all the money being spent. It'll be interesting to see how much the projected economic impact is. 143,000 people. And Davey Height's going to be on the show in the next segment. We're going to kind of recap it from his standpoint. He was a professional fisherman. He is now on Bassmaster Live with Mark Zona and those doing the live, and just a really good way to keep up with the Classic if you can't be out on the water with them, which most of us are not. Let's see. Oh, how many were at launch on Sunday morning? If you were, I got to watch launch from above, which is kind of a unique angle. I have to say, thanks to David Knobloch, Venture Aviation out at Greenville Airport for, it was an idea. I was sitting there listening to Neil Paul talk about, Star Spangled Anthem singers. And I said, Neil, we could really do something neat with this, and kind of gave him my idea. And he said, well, on some hands, it's easier to ask forgiveness than ask for permission. So go ahead and plan it. We did bring Bass in on it simply because we wanted to make sure the drones were out of the way and wanted some good pictures. I'm still waiting. I hope there's some good pictures coming from this. But anyway, David Knobloch has a Stearman, a PT-17 built in 1943, and it has a full smoke system in it. So it was just kind of a natural to say, if you really want to put an exclamation point on the 2018 Classic, let's do a flyover of the launch, smoke on, and just do something different. So we did. It was kind of a squirrely morning. Daylight savings time really hurt us because at 6:45, there's not a whole lot of light to be flying an airplane, taking off or landing. But those guys, David and his brother found out a little bit of information. They've been flying since they were 16. So, and flown a lot of stuff and all the way up through their corporation now that, flies the latest corporate jets and King Airs and that sort of thing. So, but it was pretty interesting morning. I had to get out at Anderson Airport. I got out about 6:30 Sunday morning and got around the building onto the flight line. They've got some tables and chairs, and I'm thinking to myself, it's 6:30 in the morning. I'm sure I have tripped some kind of security system, camera system, and in any moment, an Anderson County policeman's going to pull up here, and he's going to come over and say, sir, what are you doing out here at this hour of the morning? And so I'm just sitting there. It's just a perfect morning. Starting to get a little light in the east, and I hear the door. Sure enough, I hear the door through the FBO open, and I was like, here comes the voice of the policeman. And instead, it's, are you Roger Metz? And I turned around, and I was like, whoa, I didn't hear you land. I didn't hear you come in. Did you spend the night down here last night or something? Because I thought it was David Knobloch, and instead it was his brother Scott, who, and they are twins. So I was a little bit freaked out Sunday morning, but had a good time talking to Scott. And then sure enough, David took off about 10 till 7 from Greenville. Flew down, got to Anderson about 10 after 7. We changed out, got strapped in. And it's funny, we had to waste a little time before we got to the ramp. And so he was doing, I call them pylon turns. I mean, you're just pretty much sitting there spinning on a wingtip. And I wasn't really paying that much attention. I mean, I was trying to keep track of the time and make sure we're going to be. And we were about 30 seconds late. We made one more turn when we should have just headed on in. But anyway, I didn't pay much attention to it. You could feel the G's a little bit on your body. You know, you weren't flying straight and level. And it wasn't until we, on our run in, and he started dropping the nose on the plane to pick up some speed and turn on the smoke. And I was like, boy, this pullout's going to be a doozy. I said, and it's been 25, 30 years since I flew sailplanes, and you were used to doing wing overs and loops and that sort of thing. It's been a few years. So I remember the thought running through my mind, don't throw up. Whatever you do, don't throw up when he pulls this thing out. And sure enough, man, we got out over Lake Hartwell, and he pulled that thing up hard, banked it up to the right. The horizon was vertical instead of being horizontal, and I made it. And I just had so much fun. Gosh, if you've never been in an open cockpit plane, it's just it's a feeling like none other. I mean, you stick your head out the side, and you get, you know, 90 knot winds in your face. It's just, okay, I'm an aviation junkie in addition to being an outdoor junkie, okay? It's just, hey, I got it. Honestly, Dad had an Aronca Champ, and he had a J3 Cub. And so I got the bug from an early age, and it just never has left me. So anyway, had fun doing that. I hope if you're on the ground, it didn't scare you too much. I think we were about 200 feet when we came over the landing, which is pretty doggone low. And it was funny, we were chasing boats down the lake. And David came over the mic, he keyed the mic, and he goes, how fast are these guys going? Because they had no clue what a bass tournament was all about. And I said, well, some of them running 75 miles an hour. He goes, I was fixing to say, we're doing 90 down the lake, and we're just staying ahead of them. And so anyway, good time. But thanks to David Knobloch, because Lori actually helped me start this show. She was here at WGTK for years. And but yeah, they stepped up and said, hey, it'd be fun to do. I think they had as much fun as I did. And hope you enjoyed it. I had a ball. And with that, seeing as the last few weeks we haven't had, the only calendar of events has been the Bassmaster Classic. But, you know, there's another classic in town this weekend. It's down in Columbia. It's the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic. It opened yesterday. It's open today. It'll be open tomorrow. And it is our state's premier outdoor show, I guess you'd say, and this calendar, as always, is brought to you by Visit Anderson Green Pond Landing and Event Center, which had a great event last week. But yeah, the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic, it runs to 7 o'clock tonight. If you want to go out tomorrow, it opens at 11 o'clock till 6 o'clock on Sunday. And you heard Dan Dupree on here last week talking about it. Lots of things to do, lots of vendors. So head on down to the South Carolina State Fairgrounds. You know, it's right there in the shadow of Williams-Brice Stadium, and see what our largest outdoor show has to offer, not only the kids with the fishing pond, the dig. You know, they got the biggest sandbox in South Carolina down there this weekend, and there's stuff for everybody: moms, dads, kids, the dogs are there. It'd just be a good time. So get down to the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic, and you won't regret the decision. Captain Cephas McCray tomorrow, if you're in the stripers. And I hope it's not too late. I'm pretty sure you can get in at the last minute. But springtime striper strategies. It's going to be at the Anderson Civic Center from 2 to 7 tomorrow. Springtime striper strategy seminar. It's up. And info you need to catch more stripers and hybrids on Lake Harwell and our other regional reservoirs. No ticket sales at the door. So I guess you need to go to nutsandboltsfishing.com and hope that you can still get in. Limited seating, so should have gotten that out last week. South Carolina, the 2018 SC Ducks Unlimited Sporting Clays Tournament Series. The next one is April 14th at Backwoods Quail Club in Georgetown. If you're interested in burning some smoke powder and smoking some clays, that one's for you. We had him on not too long ago from the Woodrunner School, but they're having a April 21st, having a Get Your Hang On Family Fun event. It's April 21st, 22nd, 9 a.m. to 12 noon on the 22nd. The Woodrunner School of Self-Reliance in Clinton, South Carolina. Get your hang on or sleep on the ground for all we care. Grab your hammocks or tents and join us for our first annual hang on April 21st and 22nd. No hiking required. Just hang out over the weekend and meet new friends. This is a family fun event and all ages are welcome. Meals are provided, so make sure to let us know if you have any food allergies. And you can find more at the Woodrunner School of Self-Reliance. It seemed like there's one more. Well, maybe I did it all right. But anyway, that's enough to get you started. I got to get back on this calendar. I'm with a few weeks of not doing it, I've kind of lost track of where I am and what I've got going. So that's just a few things. There's a lot more coming up. Springtime, you know, if you don't have something to schedule like this, hit one of the local state parks. I think most all of them have a lake. They all have bank access, canoe access. It's not hard to find a place to get out on the water and fish. Springtime now is a perfect time to get out there and start hiking. You know, getting that, you made that resolution back in January to get more exercise. And like me, you haven't done anything for 3 months. So now's the time to because the Palmetto Conservation Foundation has got Palmetto Trail. So, anyway, we'll be back. We're going to talk to Davey Height about the Bassmaster Classic just happened here in Greenville. So hang on for more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It was a great week last week, as we talked about on the last show, and if you're a part of it, you know how good it was. And I want to kind of do a classic wrap-up, and who better to have to do that with me than Davey Height, 23 years out on the fish professional fishing tours, an FLW Cup title, a classic title, two Angler of the Years, and so many top tens and all that, you can't get into it. But Davey, thanks for taking a few minutes to be on Woods and Water, South Carolina.
You bet. My pleasure. My pleasure. Anytime. I apologize for the lack of communication, I guess. About 2 weeks ago, you asked me about being on your show, and I thought you wanted me to come to the studio, and I had some other stuff going on, but that's totally my bad there.
No, actually, I'm working on a teleporter that would just, like, pick people up, bring them to the studio, and put them back, you know, fears down the road. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It's as easy to telephone, but you'd be amazed how many people think that when I say somebody coming on the show, they got to come to Greenville to do it. I'm like, oh no.
Well, I've been on your show via radio before, but I don't know why. I guess because I was close by. I thought maybe you were going to something.
Yeah.
But anyway, like I said, my fault.
No problem at all. And look, I'm glad you're doing better. I know you had some health issues and all. It is good to see you back out on the water and hear your voice. I mean, the first time when I talked to you that first day, your voice was just weak. I was like, man, Davey's just not himself, but it's glad to hear you back to being Davey Height again.
I appreciate that. Yeah, my appendix ruptured and it had me down. I've had a lot of people say that exact same thing that you did. My voice sounded really weak, maybe they were worried about me, and I appreciate that. I really do, but I feel fine now. After a great week at the Classic, it did wear me down a little bit, but man, what a week. The excitement right when we thought maybe it was going to be over, that Jason Christie was going to seal the deal.
Yeah.
Gosh, he couldn't catch one on that final morning. It made everything very interesting.
It's just amazing to me, as good as those guys are, and you still have times when you can't catch that fish. I mean, Skeet Reese didn't catch anything on Friday.
Yep. Well, before I even get into this, I want to say I was probably and may still be known as the hardest, most stubborn, hard-headed fisherman that ever fished Bassmaster Tournament Trail. So I'm not throwing stones at Steve Reese, Jason Christie.
Yeah.
But, gosh, they were just a little stubborn, or especially Christy. But I talked about it a little bit on Bassmaster Live. I think that's part of what makes him great.
Yeah.
That he is going to use baits and patterns and things where he can has caught big fish in the past and tries to just catch five and win.
Yeah.
And like I said, I've been there, done that, and I've had a little success and a lot of failures, but gosh, I just wanted him to pick up a Cinco and throw it a little bit, but now that's me. You know, he was leading the Bassmaster Classic,
right,
and I was sitting in the arena. So what good is my advice?
Well, but you've been there and done that, so you know. And that's what makes you such a great, such a wealth of information.
Well, and I have a lot of experience, that's for sure, with the 20 couple of years on the Bassmaster Trail. And like I mentioned, I got more stories about being stubborn and not doing things the right way than I do of doing things the right way. But there again, Jason Christie's going to win his. It's just unfortunate that just 2 years ago, and gosh, he just got beat in that one because Edwin Evers caught that, what was it, 29 pounds on the final day. Just an incredible comeback.
Yep.
But this time was a little different, but still heartbreaking. I mean, I had quite a few people text me Monday morning saying, how do you think Christy feels? And my response was, I don't know how he feels, but I feel bad for him. I really did. But Jordan Lee will be a great champion once again.
Yeah.
He did such a good job last year, and I know he'll do the same this year.
Did you have a pick going into this, Davey?
Well, I did, and it was biased. A lot of people think, well, he's just real good friends with Kevin Van Dam, but I rode with Kevin on Wednesday, and he was not initially my pick to win the classic, but he had a great practice day on Wednesday and was not fishing around anywhere that he thought he would actually fish in the tournament.
Okay.
He was just fishing similar pattern, and, man, he really caught him good. So he was very confident. I was very confident just because, I saw what he put in the boat on Wednesday. So, but gosh, he ended up having a tough tournament for Kevin Van Dam. That's sure. He didn't even make that cut.
Yeah, and that's got to hurt. Those guys live for the classic, and they live for making the cut to fish on Sunday.
They do. They absolutely do. And it's so frustrating as an angler. I mean, you work so hard all year long to try to qualify for the classic, and then if you don't make that cut and if you're not able to fish on Sunday, you beat yourself up so bad. And I talked to several people. You know, Kevin was, he was upset that he didn't make the cut. Carl Swieback, a longtime friend of mine, fishing his first Bassmaster Classic, and he didn't make that Sunday cut. He was so disappointed. I was like, man, don't beat yourself up. You just fished the Bassmaster Classic.
That's right.
There can only be one winner, but you put a lot of pressure on yourself. It's an individual sport, and that's what makes those guys great. They put a lot of pressure on themselves to try to win every single event.
Yeah. It was up in the air until the end on Sunday, which makes a really good tournament.
It does. There again, I was kind of in pain for Jason Christie, but and he came out Sunday morning and caught about 16 pounds. It would have been not nearly as exciting during the day on Bassmaster Live, and certainly not nearly as exciting at the weigh-in. So he made it interesting at his expense. I hate it for him, but man, it was anybody's game there.
Well, I was talking, I had Bruce Aiken on the show prior to the classic. We were talking, and he brought the point that Bass Live, the first year of Bass Live was 2015 when it was here before. And I remember you, I rode with Skeet Reese on Friday. I remember we pulled out of the water and went through boat check. We're sitting there, and you came over and did a first look with Skeet Reese and all. And that's essentially how you ended up full-time on Live. So how was the first year?
Well, it was great. I felt guilty during the year last year. I had so many people say, do you miss the tournaments? I know you got to be dying to be out there. And I didn't really miss it that much. Surely, the first morning of the Bassmaster Classic, I think for the rest of my life, I'll be a little envious that I'm not competing in that particular tournament. And when I see them catching really good fish, whether it be smallmouth up north or Lake Okeechobee or, on Lake Hartwell, a little bit, I was like, that's in me.
Sure.
But having fished full time for 22 years and some highs and some lows and experience and all that, I have no regrets. I really enjoy what I'm doing. I'm getting a lot of positive comments, which means a lot to me because, This whole deal, like you say, it started with the first look, but I had no idea I would be doing something like this. I had been wondering for just a couple of years, what are you going to do when you retire from fishing for a living? How are you going to transition?
Right.
And I'm too young to quote unquote retire, and I want to stay involved in the fishing, the people I've known for so long and worked with and seen their children grow up to be young adults, that sort of thing. So it was just a great opportunity. And I'm fishing as much or more than I ever have, just more for fun.
Fun.
Hey, if they're biting, I go. And yep. If they're not biting, I come home. So it's been fun. It really has. And I have no regrets. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I've got some great folks to work with.
Oh, you do. You work with some
Mark
really good ones.
Tommy right there on set.
Yes.
But then, like, when the Classic was over, we got there for a group saying, people don't have any idea. Heck, I didn't have any idea. It takes so many people to make that happen. And when we got ready for the group photo after Jordan had won and everybody was clearing out a Coliseum, and it was 49, I think, including me.
Wow.
People in that group photo that it takes to make Bassmaster Live and then also the footage for the ESPN show that we'll be taping this next week in studio, me and Tom Anzona. But 50 people. When you normally only see two or three, me and Tommy or me and Zona or the three of us, but it takes 50 people to make all that happen. It's really incredible.
Do y'all ever worry about causing like traffic wrecks or stuff like that with live? Because people watch live everywhere all the time. I mean, people are going to get fired from their jobs for live.
Well, I don't know about that, but I was a little concerned. They were talking to those leaders on the way back from off the lake to the Bonsa Coolers, and I was thinking, man, if one of those guys wrecked, it could be a bad, bad deal. But I'll have to admit, I'm guilty. When I'm not on live, when I'm on site, like I am a couple of times a year when Tommy and Zona are there in the studio, I listen to it in my truck riding down the road. I don't watch the screen so much, but I do listen to it, that's for sure.
Yeah. You know, all week long with the warm weather we had a few weeks before, and then it got cold, and then it started the warming trend again. Everybody was saying, you know, yeah, it's setting up to be a real slugfest. I think we're going to catch a lot of fish. They're going to be caught shallow. And they did catch some fish shallow, but it really never got into that full-blown what you'd call a slugfest-type fishery. What happened? I mean, I'm sure those fish are all messed up from this springtime weather we have in South Carolina, but tell us a little bit about what was happening on the lake Friday, Saturday, Sunday with the weather and the fish.
Well, I think there was a couple things going on. We've been teased with warm weather. Well, we weren't teased there for about a week and a half. We had record-breaking high temperatures, and the water temperature came up about 15, 18 degrees, and a solid 18 in most places. And those fish really started getting what I would say ahead of schedule. Some fish spawned on almost all of our lakes here in South Carolina. A ton of fish spawned down at Santee Cooper. I was down there kind of during that time period.
Okay.
And a lot of fish moved up and, you know, were staging. And then we've had the cold weather. And everybody was saying one more day or just one or two more days and they're going to all, you know, bust up towards the bank. And, gosh, I was going to fish some this week because I thought this week was going to be the week.
Yeah.
And yesterday, the wind blowing out of north about 25 miles an hour and it only gets 3 feet. So that one more day or a couple more days, I think I know I'm still saying the same thing. It just... Right when you think it's going to, those fish are going to move up and all of them be on the bank or a high percentage of them be on the bank, we have these little cold fronts that just keep backing things up. The thing that I think personally hurt some of those guys, a lot of their practice and pre-practice, we had wind and fronts coming in or going out.
Right.
And they got on patterns that really relied on the wind. And Jason Christie being a prime example, I think that's what really hurt him on the final day. I think that's what hurt Kevin. He was fishing very different than Jason Christie, but he was relying on some wind to be able to catch those fish down on the lower end of that really clear water.
Right.
And Hey, that's why it's the world championship. That's why you have to fish 3 days. It's so, so much more difficult to catch fish for 3 or 4 consistent days than it is. I'm sure I grew up just like most of the other fishermen, fishing 1 day tournaments, you know, fishing one on a Saturday or fishing even half a day tournament. And it's just a different deal when you have to try to put it together, especially when the weather's changing every day for a 3 or 4 day event.
Yeah, Wednesday practice was cold and windy as all get out. Friday was nice. Saturday we had rain, storms moving through. Saturday night, there was a big storm blew through Saturday night. I mean, lots of rain, lots of lightning and thunder. And then Sunday was pretty flat calm out there for the most part.
Yeah, just changing conditions. And that's why Jordan won.
Yeah.
We had a camera on him every day, at least for part of the day, but every single day, all 3 days, and he was fishing different places, different lures. He was just fishing the moment, and it's so, so hard to do if you've never been in that situation. The pressure of a Bassmaster Classic and the pressure of knowing you're going to ride in front of anywhere from 8,000 to 15,000 people, depending on the day, and it starts messing with the way you want to fish, and you don't adjust. And that's one thing, probably the thing that impresses me most about Jordan, is how he seems to be mature well beyond his age with dealing with pressure and being able to just keep adjusting with the fish and letting the conditions dictate what he does rather than maybe past history. Like, I know myself, I've been so guilty of this.
Do you think some of that is because he doesn't have all the experience of some of the other guys?
It could be. I've thought to myself throughout my career, later in my career, thinking about my whole career, that, man, my first 5 or 10 years when I didn't have a 40 by 60 boat garage full of tackle, and I didn't have, you know, all this stuff that I just, you know, meat and potatoes kind of guy. And
sure.
Stuff to what worked for me. And it seems like maybe it works out better for you that way. You get so much history on a lake or just in a pre-spawn situation, you can just try to do too many things. And that can be trouble. Or, like I said, I've done this too, just like Jason Christie. You just determined that, hey, this time of year on this bladed jig, I know if I can catch 5, I will win.
Yeah.
And then you just get stubborn with your experience / old age, or in my case, hard head, whatever it might be. So.
Well, you're not the only
Jordan's
one.
Jordan's doing it right.
Yeah, you're not Jordan's the only one with the hard head. You know, Casey, I rode around with him on Wednesday, and boy, he had one thing in mind he wanted to do, and he kept going back to it, and he'd fiddle with something else for a few minutes. I just don't like fishing this way, that's what I say. That's what you've been saying about Jason. Yeah, you think this is the way I'm going to catch him, and I'm a live or die this way.
Yep.
And
that, I'm sure he's won a lot of tournaments doing that exact thing,
yes.
And I have too. But then had more stories about, you know, train wrecks.
Yeah.
Being stubborn.
That's
too.
It. That's it. You know, Jordan Lee, his brother Matt, some of the others up there, coming out of the college ranks, do you think that gives them an advantage over some of the other anglers coming at? And I don't know how exactly to put that, but, you know, they've been preparing at a younger time in their lives. You know, you think how much effect, words just elude me at this one. Does that give them an advantage?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When I started fishing tournaments, professionally, I thought my greatest asset was the fact that I started fishing tournaments at 12 years old. And when I say fishing tournaments, yeah, I'm talking about $20 Wildcat. I wasn't old enough to join the federation and fish. You know, I didn't think I'd ever be 16 years old where I could actually join a club and a federation.
Okay.
And, you know, when I get to be an old man at 16, I was thinking at 13 and 14, 15 years old, because I could fish a Saturday Wildcat tournament against those guys, but I couldn't fish any of the club level stuff or the federation stuff. But at that time, I thought I really did. When I was in my early 20s, I had 10 years of tournament experience. And back then, like, nobody had that, or very, very, very few people had that.
Okay.
Now all these guys, like you're talking about, the Jordan, Matt Lee, the Dustin Connell.
Yes.
those younger guys that have come up through the high school and college ranks, they all started fishing tournaments in there when they were teenagers. In my generation, most guys didn't start fishing bass tournaments until they were already young adults and had decent or good jobs and could afford a boat and that sort of thing. And then they would get into bass tournament fishing as a hobby. So I absolutely think it's tremendous for them to start young, spend time on the water. Obviously, there's more availability to learn while you're not on the water than ever through so many different channels, social media, and gosh, YouTube. I mean, you just name it, your show, anything. I mean, there's so many more tools there available than there ever has been. But then also, you see the guys that are successful, they use that, but they also have a lot of time on the water, just like Jordan Lee has. And it's definitely an asset.
Yeah, it is. Pat Robertson wrote a great article about you in South Carolina Wildlife Magazine. If you haven't, folks, if you want to know a little bit more about Davy Height, it was in the September-October 2017 magazine. Just a good background. Puts you in a real good light, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that. I've known Pat for a long time. Maybe he's getting a little delusional in his old age of being broke. Everybody gets stuff about me. I don't know.
It's all good.
Pat has known my whole career. He did a little small feature article on me when I went and fished my first pro-am tournament as an amateur.
Wow. And
so Pat rode with me the first competition day of the Classic that I won. You know, I got a lot of history with Pat, and he is a true friend and certainly an ambassador for an outdoor writer in the state of South Carolina, nationwide, in my opinion.
He is. He's a really good guy. I wish, you know, from my standpoint, this little radio thing is 4 years old now, and I've met so many of these guys, including yourself, you know, in conjunction with that. I'm thinking, gosh, I miss so much time when some of these guys were in their prime, like, you know, Jim Cass, or Pat Robertson, and some of those other guys, or just Terry Madewell. I mean, there's right here in South Carolina, we have a wealth of these outdoor writers and public figures that just, man, it just shines on our state.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
And our state shined out on this Classic. I mean, record attendance. Boy, the expo was packed every day I was out there. I think Saturday morning, I think we had 5,000 people at launch Saturday morning.
Yeah, that's great.
Just unreal. I mean, you figured Hartwell in 2015 drew 103. So we almost up 30% over then.
Wow.
Some of these numbers are impressive, and it just goes to what a good show that BASS puts on when they put this Classic on.
Well, they do, but it makes me proud to be a South Carolinian to have the people show up. The city of Greenville and Anderson, they did a good job promoting. Heck, every morning when I turned the TV on, WYFF there out of Greenville, they were live on the spot. I mean, it takes a lot. I mentioned 50 people to make Bassmaster Live happen.
Yep.
It takes thousands of people. Certainly hundreds, but probably 1,000 or more people working towards the Bassmaster Classic. People like yourself, people like Neil Paul.
Yes.
I mean, just lots and lots of folks behind the scene to make it all come together. It made me really proud when I started hearing about the record attendance at the convention center there, TD Convention Center at Takeoff, and then at the Bon Secours arena there. It was just incredible. It made me proud to be there. The one Classic that stands out in my mind in Chicago, when almost nobody showed up for the weigh-in or everything, it was like, gosh, can you imagine being from here and seeing just nobody? It seemed like nobody cared that the Bassmaster Classic was in town, but it was the farthest thing you can ever imagine from that this past weekend in Greenville. It was a lot of excitement there. It made me proud.
It was. Okay, live going forward this year. When somebody wants y'all to come in, Red River next in 2 weeks or so?
In 2 weeks, we'll be in Orange, Texas, Sabine River.
Sabine River, that's right.
Toledo Bend.
Yep.
And it'll be a tough tournament. They had the flood go through Houston
right.
And Orange, Texas area there, Beaumont, last year, and it devastated so much. And it certainly set the fishery back just a little bit, but It'll be a good tournament. Everybody back in the swing. The people that did not fish the Bassmaster Classic, I'm sure they're chomping at the bit
sure.
to try to have a good tournament and make next year's Bassmaster Classic. I will be on site for that event.
Okay.
Tommy and Mark Zona will be in studio. I'll be on the water covering, trying to keep up with all the folks. I know the area because I fished down there a little bit, but T-Roy from Salt Baby, he's going to be riding around with
me.
Oh, wow. Help guide me all through the little backwater areas that I'm sure he knows so well. So I'm looking forward to that being on site.
That'll be good. Live will air when this in there that tournament?
It'll be, that tournament is not this.
Yes, 2 weeks.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's going to end on a Monday, and I don't have a calendar here in front of me, but it's not this coming Monday, but the next. What day would that be?
April the 9th is the Monday.
9th, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that'll be the final day.
Okay.
April 9th will be the final day. They're starting a day later to finish up on a Monday. You know, I probably shouldn't say this because so many people that watch live, their boss or supervisor might be listening, but our numbers on people viewing are a whole lot better on Monday than Sunday. So I think some people might watch Bassmaster Live while they're at work. So that's a good thing.
You'd probably be right with that one, Davey. Well, look, again, I appreciate you coming on Woods and Water, South Carolina. Look forward to doing this again. Safe travels out there, and we'll catch up with you somewhere out there on the water.
Thank you so much, Roger.
Yes, sir,
Dave.
Yes, sir. Welcome back to the final segment of Woods and Water South Carolina for today. I hope you enjoyed Davey's take on the classic. Just one more nice guy. I mean, the longer I do this show, the more of those guys I run into and get to be friends with. Outdoor people as a whole are just good people, like me. The noise you hear here is me opening up my turkey tags, which will probably go in my drawer because I am not a turkey hunter. I'm sorry. Wrong time of the year for me. Wrong time of the year. Turkey season and bird season, being quail season, just two of the things I had to give up or not get started in because of the time of the year. But, you know, hey, turkey season opened, Tuesday? So a lot of people have been out there and good for you. You can get out there and turkey hunt, do it. I don't know. I may try to get out here towards the end of the season. Just get outside, sit in the woods, listen to the woods wake up. That's always worth the wake up call before sunrise. If you're like me, I don't want to get too much into the school shooting stuff. I struggle with it because it's an issue that I think has got a lot of different viewpoints. Some I agree with, some I don't. I will say this. I think it's got a lot to do with how much time kids spend with video games. And this article I'm going to read is from the New Yorker, February 7th, Rachel Klein. And see if you can get the analogy. It's kind of cryptic. And so you're going to have to think when you listen to this one, but listen and see if you can figure it out. It's called Limiting Your Child's Fire Time, a guide for concerned Paleolithic parents. According to the most recent cave drawings, children nowadays are using more fire than ever before. And it's no wonder. Fire has many wonderful applications, such as cooking meat, warming the home, and warding off wild animals in the night. We adult Homo erectus, with our enlarged brains and experience of pre-fire days, can moderate our use. But our children, some of who have never lived during a time when you couldn't simply strike two rocks together for an hour over a pile of dried grass to eventually produce a spark that, with gentle coaxing, might grow into a roaring flame, can have difficulty self-monitoring their interactions with fire. You don't want to be the bad guy, but you also don't want to make sure that your child engages in other activities like mammoth hunting and the gathering of rocks and bones for which to make tools. So how do you set appropriate boundaries for your child on fire usage without jeopardizing the family unit so crucial to the survival of the species? Here are some tips. Establish clear but firm limits. Fire is nice, but there's a time and a place for it. So institute specific fire watching times and stick to them. After dinner, when the fire is lit anyway, is one good option, as well as early in the morning when fire is just the thing to warm a chilly cave. Those living in glacial areas may have a harder time curtailing the use of fire, but just remind your children that when you were that age, several layers of animal pelts were enough to keep you perfectly warm. Remember, you're the patriarch or matriarch, depending on your community's custom surrounding familial power structures, and you make the rules. 2, have a designated fire room in your dwelling. Those with smaller caves or huts might find this suggestion difficult, but even establishing a fire corner can help to create a separate fire and non-fire space in your living area. In the non-fire spaces, encourage traditional activities such as conversation, as much as your current vocabulary will allow, arrowhead shaving or stick drawing in mud or soft stones. Reminding your children of the pleasures provided by these traditional activities can help reduce the seductive lure of the fire's dancing flames. 3, watch for changes and communicate concerns. For many children, fire is a harmless, pleasant addition to their lives, but for some it can become an all-consuming passion. If your child seems to be growing unhealthily attached to the fire, don't wait to talk to them about it. A few common fire-obsessed behaviors to look out for include distraction, ignoring people when they are in the same room as fire, preoccupation, talking or thinking about fire even when there is no fire present, deception, going off to secretly find make fires, lying about fire usage when confronted, anthropomorphization, talking to, interacting with the fire as if it were a sentient being, which the elders we consulted say is highly unlikely, though they have yet to entirely rule out the presence of powerful magical beings within the inferno. 4, commit to non-fire family time. This last tip is the most important because if all you're doing is restricting your child's behavior and environment, he's bound to resent you. So introduce non-fire activities that the whole family can enjoy together and commit to them on a regular basis. These activities will depend on your region and climate, of course, but hunting and or gathering is always a great way to be active and ensure your family's survival. If your tribe has already discovered music, carve a bone flute and work on a family song. Believe in a god, carve some rudimentary icons in his, her, their image. There's no end to the fun you can have when you put your significantly larger than a chimpanzee's mind to it. In the end, just remember that fire, like most innovations, is both a blessing and a curse. Sure, it makes our lives easier, our survival likelier, and will probably lead to the greatest evolutionary paradigm shift in human history. But it's also dangerous, destructive, and yes, possibly infested with demonic forces that wish us ill. As with everything in life, balance is key. If you can imagine what it was like a few thousand years ago when the first humans started walking upright and how much grief they probably got from their parents, you'll have some empathy for your children's unique place in the evolutionary narrative. At the same time, don't forget that you're the boss and that until they mate and produce viable offspring, what you say goes. And, of course, it goes without saying that in the, again, very unlikely event that fire is both sentient and vengeful, we humbly beg his forgiveness for our insolence and pray to be spared our fleeting and insignificant lives. Now, I know that was kind of funny. Fire, you know, the warming your cave and, you know, doing pictures in soft mud and stuff like that. But do you get the point? Do you get what they're trying to say here? Technology. You know, it's for all the research I can do, you cannot find anyone that says violent video games have anything to do with some of the stuff these kids are doing these days. And I simply don't believe it. I had a conversation with Liz Ogilvie, American Sports Fishing Association, last Saturday afternoon. And we were talking about this very same issue about, you know, the time that kids are on video games that are not outdoors, and we're fixing to go off a cliff in conservation funding in this country because of that. And we're going to get more into that down the road. But, you know, you use fire here as being funny. And it is. I mean, it's a great article. But it's talking about technology. You know, there's a time for it. There's a place for it. It needs to be limited. The benefits of getting outdoors when you're a kid are lifelong benefits, not just the day you're out there or the little overnight camp trip in the backyard. I mean, that stuff stays with you your entire life. And tell me this, how many people take pictures and frame them on their desk of your kids playing video games on their phones. Nobody does that. You have the pictures you have are, you know, mountains, rivers, fishing, sunrises, sunsets, snow. That's so why does that need to be such an event in our lives that it's memorialized in a picture? That can be every day. It can be every weekend. You know, Osearch, interviewed him, Chris Fisher, captain of Osearch. You know, he said, we're never going to be to take it away from kids because that's how they get their information. But we can use it to inspire them to get outdoors, to use it as a method to find out where to go hike a trail or to go fishing. You know, put the information through that phone to inspire them to get outside. So, anyway, great article. The New Yorker, you know, print it out, read it. It'll make you laugh. I had a hard time controlling myself the whole time I was on there. So, anyway, well, that's it for another week. Lots of stuff going on, lots of stuff upcoming on the show. We're going to have Dr. Grant Woods on talking turkey hunting, CWD, some other things. Got more guests coming on. Hey, we got 3 air shows coming up in South Carolina in April. So, it'll be a good one. As always, make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can because that's where South Carolina comes alive. And don't forget your camera. If you need one, man, they got some nice ones out there. I just got a new one. It's a dynamite camera. See you back here next Saturday, more Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Ain't it like a friend of mine to hit me from behind.